So I just want to, the source 16, 17, 18, which we did at the end of last class, is an example of how, or examples of how Chazal were very sensitive of subtle textual hints that is supposed to raise your antenna and make your ear tingle about a similar word used. Remember the examples we gave, Hatachas Elohim Anochi, that Yaakov speaks to Rochel about her incessant desire to be a mother. And what are you bothering me for? I'm having fine children with your sister. This is your problem, sweetie. You take it with God. What point do you have with me? Taka, what kind of way is this to talk? Right? So Chazal were Chazal say that was insensitive, but you can hear the point. If something is wrong, what does the Medrash or the commentary have to do if they point to something wrong?
Give a solution.
Resolution. In other words, show how. So what, something wrong isn't just wrong. There has to be a reaction to it. There has to be something like media connected media. That's good parenting. You don't just say to someone, okay, you did wrong. So what's going to happen as a result? What message do I have to get? What lesson am I going to learn? All right. So the lesson here is that she will have a child. And there will be friction between that child and other children you already have. And at the height of that friction, which is where they think he's going to kill them because of what they did to him, now that Yaakov is dead, remember?
Right.
And he uses the same exact words. Now, what words did he use? He might have been speaking to them in Egyptian. I don't know for all we know, right? But the words used by that Hashem transcribes emotion is the same words. That's the point. In other words, when Yaakov is talking to Lavan and he says, Lama Rimi Sani, right? Why did you deceive me? Right? Remember when Yaakov took the bracha, Yitzchak said, Ba'achicha b'mirma, the same word in Hebrew. Now, it's very possible that when Yaakov was talking to Lavan here, he was speaking in the language of the land, which is Aramaic. Right? Yaakov goes up to find a wife in Aram. Are they all speaking Hebrew with him, or is he speaking Aramaic with them? Much more likely, he's speaking Aramaic. Aramaic is close enough to Hebrew. And Yaakov's whole family originally comes from Aram. So the Sama, he spoke the language. And that means that he spoke a different word here, right? And the word is written so that your ear picks up on this Yaakov. There's a little irony here. You may believe you were an older brother, right? So don't be so surprised that you're going to get the older sister. And Lavan is going to feel self-righteous. Because when he explains himself, and he answers this question, he says, Lo ye'osekein bimkomenu lo seis hatzi'ira lifnei habachira. You get? Why does he put in that bimkomenu?
Because it's not like what you do.
Not like what you guys do, where you put younger ones before the older ones. And the interesting thing is that there's a psak halacha like this, right?
Yeah.
And Shulchan Aruch. That the younger sister cannot get married before an older sister is unmarried without her permission. Presumably, Rachel went to Leah and said to him, "Listen, I know you're older, but I have this chance to marry this great hunk who's able to turn over that whole rock by himself in the well." Remember this story? I have a chance to marry him. It's okay with you. I don't know if she has that or not, but. Anyway, Lavan is sensitive to this, and Yaakov is not, apparently. So what I'm trying to say is that it's on the reading list, Robert Alter, The Art of Biblical Narrative. In his introduction, he complains that the rabbis in the Midrashim were not so sensitive to these little nuances, and these subtle hints, and these words that appear again later to recognize... the connections that the author is trying to make, like we did with Haman and Esav last time.
Doesn't Rashi do that a lot?
Rashi does that a lot. I'm accusing Alter of not reading enough Midrashim, or of not being so proficient in Rashi. Right? I'm just saying. So in his introduction, he makes quite a bit of a tzimis about. How he is not the only one. There are others, other contemporaries certainly, who do this kind of thing. And he, you know, he finds the biblical nuances and trends. And there was an excellent doctoral thesis written about 30 years ago on this topic by Professor David Sykes. David Sykes, he taught here for some years. And that's the purpose of, especially in St. Liberatius, how certain words are meant, meant to like tingle your ear and say, why did you use that word? And it's easy for you to do it. Like, let's say, go back to Parshas Noach. The word used in Hebrew for the water covering the mountains, right? Right. So it says the water rose above the mountains. And it says even how 15 amos above the highest mountain. Obviously, it didn't take the shape, and then water stays on the mountain. 15 amos atop the highest mountain. Right? So, what do you use? Vayalu hamayim, vayechasu hamayim. These are the words you normally expect to see. Right? This is really what Rashi always does. Instead, the Torah uses this word, very strange verb, vayigberu hamayim. The water conquered, as though it conquered the... Now, it's true that you can use, vayigberu means... It overcame the mountain.
So it strengthened and increased.
That's what the English says, yeah. Okay. But then an English translation won't do for you what the irony of using this word is. So Alter is good at pointing these things out. Rashi didn't concern himself with this kind of thing, but it's beautiful because the people who are described earlier in Bereishis, when God says, I can't put up with these people anymore, it says they were giborim anshei Hashem. Get it? They were giborim, men of renown. Right? Nasel anu Shem. Get it? Right? That's Migdal Bava, the Gemara. Man is just, they become too great for themselves. They want to become gods, right? So if the problem with the people on earth is that they are so interested in their own might, look what the water is going to do to you. I'm going to use a word to describe what the water rising that plugs into what the people are. So it's by Yikaburu, you get it? So Alter is very good at doing that. I just gave a few examples here of 16, 17, 18 where Midrashim are quite aware of that as well. Right? And when you learn biblical narrative, just rip apart the Hebrew. You have to analyze each word. Why did you use this verb and not another word? Right? That's really how Rashi tends to work. I'm not saying he does it every single word. Right? But that's what's happening. Okay, the rest we just have 19 to 23 to finish this section of Chazal. And I'm really, let's look at 20 for a minute. You see 20, Bereishis Rabba Ayin Tes. So here is where Yaakov is traveling, and he learns that Esav is on the way. He learns that Esav is coming with 400 men to greet him. Now, when Yaakov had to leave home, Torah gives two reasons for his leaving home. One is that his brother wants to kill him, right? But Rivka doesn't want to tell Yitzchak that reason because she doesn't want to have any conversation about why he has to leave home for that, in that way. Because she doesn't want her husband to ever find out or even talk about it that maybe she was behind it. How did Yaakov come up with this plan? Where did it come from? Right? So she comes up with another reason that he has to leave home while giving a shtuff at Esav. For marrying these Canaanites around here, you know what? Let's send him up north. So Yitzchak can say, what do we have to send him?
What do we have to do?
To send him to find a wife.
Yeah, but he said, like we did.
Like we did for me. Yitzchak didn't go up there. Someone went up. I'm sure Yitzchak has plenty of Eliezers around. Right? Send someone up and bring home a woman. Impress them. Alright, so Ibn Ezra actually answers that question. He says, because they had he squandered Avraham's wealth. It was easier for Eliezer to convince a girl to come down because he had great wealth. He gave her all these gifts. But for Haraya, when Yaakov meets Rachel, why does Rashi say he cried?
He had this theater.
He didn't think to give him. And he He doesn't give everything. Right? So Rashi says because Eliezer Eliphaz, Esav's grandson, stole it from him. All right, because Rashi doesn't go along with it. You know, you have to ask, well, why did you take something with you? Take some money. You know, you have to impress a girl. You got to take something with you, right? Anyway, so Yaakov was told by his mother, you have to go up there. I'm not going to tell your father this reason, but you have to go up there because your brother wants to kill you. And he says he's going to wait till his father dies. And when then the mourning of father is over, he's going to kill you. You better not be here for a little while. Let him cool off. When he no longer feels that way, I'll send for you. Okay. Chizkuni says, why should I lose you, your father, and you on the same day? Father died, then they'll kill you. So you know what? Let him cool off. Right? I don't know if that's good payers because the shkal usually is only used for losing a child. So I'll send for you. What happens? She never sends for him. She dies before she sends for him. So it's time to go back. I can't wait any longer. And he goes on his own. He goes without her being sending. I'll continue in a second. And he sends Esav a message. Shlach Yaakov Malochim El Esav. He sends a message to Esav. He doesn't try to surreptitiously make his way home. And when he finds out that Esav is coming to greet him with 400 men, Yaakov doesn't know what's the purpose of meeting with so many men. Okay? So Yaakov is by Yitzhak, Rashi says he was afraid that he would be killed, by Yitzhak that he would kill. But the Choshua says a simple shot. Mother said that he would wait till father died to kill me. If he's coming out with 400 men, maybe that means father is dead and not in here. Otherwise, why would he be demonstrating this intent after all these years? Father must be dead. Right? So that was the Vayetzer love. Following? Mm-hmm. Alright, so now so when Yaakov comes up to meet Esav, it says he brought forth his wives, it gives a certain order, it gives he put forth the Pilakshim, Zilpah and Bilha, right? And their children, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. Then behind them was Leah and her children. And then behind them, Yosef and Rachel. Notice that the others, the women come first, but with Yosef, it's Yosef and Rachel. So Rashi notices that and gives various reasons. I was a bit bothered by Yaakov's order, you know, like, let him kill them first. And, you know, he says, if he comes, we put them some time apart, just stagger them, so if you see that his intent is to kill, at least the others will run away. In other words, I have to be prepared for battle in case he wants to kill us, while, very tricky now, not embarrassing him, that to make him think that he wants to kill, that I think he wants to kill us in case he doesn't. We find out later that he doesn't really want to kill him. Except according to the message,
it
says he tried to.
What?
He
doesn't intend on killing him at that time.
Yeah, okay, but that is his dilemma. I don't want him to think of it that I think that he would kill me, just in case he doesn't, right? So, it seems that it's quite an amicable approach to me there. But the when he comes to meet them, it says that he showed them all these people. I'm just a little troubled that he puts the shpachos first. I'm not allowed to do that. You can't say, oh, these humans go first. You know, everyone's on the same level when it comes to this kind of thing. Unless God, Naphtali, God, Asher were better fighters. The general has to know which fighters to put in front, which fighters get, you know. Alright, so unless that. I heard another parish in Kohelis that says, God protects the weakest most. So the Shvachos were the weakest. They were, you know, they were at least protected in the household. So they would be likely to be most protected by God. I don't know what other answer to give you. Alright, so when it says that he presented his family to Esav, someone's missing. Look at the Medrash. Now understand what anyone writes such a medrash, there's There's a deep point behind this. Why doesn't it say he showed them Dina? So Rashi brings this down, yes.
Because he doesn't want them to be fighting. He doesn't want there to be any fighting going down because when Dina was in, Midian.
Shem had not happened yet.
The thing with Shimon and Levi didn't happen yet.
No.
But if he sees her,
he'll it's an illusion.
If he sees her, he might want her. Okay, that's why Yosef stood in front of Rachel. Right? If he sees her, he may want her. Right? My brother's daughter. Now, mind you, he would have to be a lot older than her. Right? She's at best, he's been away 20 years. She's child number, 8 or 9, right? She's maybe like 10, 11. I mean, what's the matter saying? Come on. You mean a 90-year-old Esav has his eyes on his 10-year-old niece? I mean, those are the facts. Those are the ages.
The marriage
is no, but this Medrash is saying so much more than that. We have to deal with the fact that Dina is not mentioned. Now, what do you do with that? There's something so deep going on here. You see, you know, Esav grew up with a patriarch, a house of patriarchs. His brother's a patriarch, his father's a patriarch, mother's a matriarch. And nothing turned him to the good path, but a good wife would have. Chazal say that, you know, Yaakov, what did Yaakov do? Why wasn't she mentioned? She was in a box. He boxed her in. Right? I want one of you to really capture what's going on here. This Medrash is making a very powerful statement. He kept Dina in a box. Not just here. The Stama, he did it all over the place. If he did it here, he must have tried to protect this one girl amongst her, surrounded by brothers, from the, you know, the ways of the world. And the Derech HaOlam. And protect her from the Esavs and the Lavans and Chamors and Shechems that are out there, right? But you have to be careful, Yaakov. You kept Dina in a box, that's what she was, in a box, so that Esav wouldn't see her. But don't you know what's going to happen when someone lives in a box their whole life? Now tell me the first two words that appear in the story where she's violated by Shechem. Batetze Dina. What do you think the Medrash is saying by Batetze?
She
went out of the box. You put someone in the box their whole life. You know, it's sort of like I think what's happening today with children. And I tell you this. I know this is a digression, but I just read an editorial written by a woman whose child is severely, severely allergic. She could die from smelling someone who just ate peanut butter. And she goes to a school where, because of her, there's a no peanut tolerance, no peanut butter. And in fact, we go to camp like that. There's one kid who has an intolerance, and there's no peanut butter in the whole camp. I actually brought my cabin was all the way up the road, and at the beginning of the summer, I brought it, and I didn't realize the policy, and we had to get rid of it. Alright? It wasn't even chunky, for goodness sakes. So the mother said, I don't like the fact that my daughter goes to such a school. Because when she leaves the school, it's not going to be that way. I want my daughter to be raised recognizing how dangerous the world is out there for her. And if she goes to a school till 8th grade, where that danger is totally removed from her. They went to a farm and a cat or something licked her and she went into an electric shock. So I need for her to know how she needs to behave on her own. Today everyone's inoculated from anything that's anything disappointing or anything that might harm us in any way. You know what I'm saying? Everyone's pressing the Purell. There's no germs anymore. No one has any resistance to anything. We're all being inoculated. So when Dina is inoculated from whatever might be out there, whether it's Esav, now maybe we do need protected from the Esavs of the world. But if by doing so, by putting it in a box, I'm not sure if that's the best thing. That's what this Baal Medrash is saying here.
Really?
Right? Chayecha. Because if you can keep her in the box, tightly caged for the rest of her life, then maybe we'll see. But if the second she has a chance to get out, she will be so enamored by the black and shining lights out there that's so new to her, you know what I'm saying? That who knows what can happen. And the story begins, Vatetzedina, and the Medrash is so clever, it says, Vatetzedina, she just went out. Let's go out. You know, she left the box. And all the bets are off at that point. And it says, because earlier in the story, it says, Vatetzeleia. When did Leah go out? To pick up those flowers that her son had picked, remember that? The Gidoim, the violets, or whatever they say it is. It's in the pasuk. Vayesed. Right? There's a story about Tetzel, so Rashi says, like mother, like daughter. Right? But Leah could handle it because she was from around. She's been around the block a few times. But Dina, her whole life, she's sitting in a box. The minute you let her out, and so there's a bunch of things going on here, because the statement that she could have brought Esav to turn around, that's an important thing. A good woman can do anything with a man, right? But further, the fact that this is what Yaakov thought he would do for Dina to keep her away from, you know, didn't quite work out so well. Yes.
That's sort of like alluding to like Yosef, though. At the same time, because Yosef was a favorite child also. Wasn't Dina the only girl? Or only recorded?
Yeah, so if you want to bring a parallel about Yosef
and Dina
being taken out of his... Yosef, according to Chazal, married Dina's daughter.
No, just forget about like marriage. Just like Yosef was totally separated from his brothers with everything. Like his brothers would do their own thing, Yosef would do his... God would make him do...
And then Yosef also went out of his surroundings.
Went out to...
Forced to go into another place. But thrives in such a safe setting. Yosef is different because Yosef was never going to amount to anything continuing under the framework of the favoritism, don't have to work for anything on his own, gets favorite treatment. That's not a good situation for him. As soon as Yosef is put on his own, where adversity comes, he turns every adversity into something much more grand than anything that would have happened to him had he remained at home. So that's a separate issue, but it has that somewhat parallel to Dina, but it's a little different. You see, in Bereishis, everyone's bursting out. People are moving. They're always in flux. Everyone's
they're always leaving Israel.
Is what?
They're always leaving Israel.
They're leaving and coming back. Everyone's in flux. So the question is, how are we gaining insight into our own, you know, vicissitudes of our lives as we going to and fro. Okay, so I'll tell you that the rest of the last few midrashim here are really pulling at straws, but there are four midrashim, 19 and 21 and 22 and 23, are extremely critical of Yaakov for various things. The last one, I'll just do that one now. Number 22 is significant because it's Reish Lakish saying that Yaakov was not demonstrating enough humility in a particular story. And it's Reish Lakish because I circled it. You see a Reish Lamed there? Because Reish Lakish was the Manda Omar earlier in this Choveret who said, Avos Hein Hein HaMerkava. The Avos were the chariot of God. God revealed himself to the world at first through Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Not so much through Noach. Because if God had revealed himself like he did to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, there wouldn't have been a flood. Noach would have been able to prevent it. God, the chariot of God as such that runs through the world where people can learn of what God is, was set by the Avos, not by Noach, obviously. So if someone feels that the Avos represent God, right, you would think that he would only see perfection in them, right? The answer is no. Human beings are not perfect. When we say we represent God, I mean, it's interesting. It's like a machlokas in the Rishonim. When there is someone who is clearly doing something as a message from God, right? Who does messages from? There are three people who go visit Avram in this week's parsha, right? They're clearly messengers, but they're called anashim, right? And they eat. can you be a malach? The Rambam says no. But the Ralbach says yes. Who told Yosef where his brothers were in Parshas Vayeshev? Remember his name? No. He's not named. He's not named. He just says, Vayemtzeu Ish. A man found him. And asked Yosef, you look lost. Wait, what's up? And he said, oh, I'm looking for my brothers. Oh, yeah, I saw you. I didn't know who the brothers were. So Rashi says, that must be an angel. An angel, a real angel, like Gavriel, he says. Right? Ibn Ezra says, no, it was just a man. And the whole story of Yosef wouldn't have happened if this man decided he was going to take one extra game of basketball before going out to... You know what I'm saying? It's amazing how little things like this happen in life. Right? It's just a man. But he was a malach. Okay? Mm-hmm. You hear what's going on here? So, in our story, Rish Lakish says... I find something very disturbing about Yaakov's behavior here, even though I say he is the very embodiment of all that is godly in the world. Chas v'shalom, not God, like Christians say, you know, but that the Avos, Avraham Yitzchak, and Christians do the like a trinity out of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, of course, and the three angels in Vayera and everything else. But I'm just saying is that. That's perfectly in line with our belief system, and it's profoundly against Christianity. No human being is divine. No human being is perfect. Right? Even though I say Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov represent the divine streak in humanity and spread that streak to everybody else, I'm still going to be critical of them. That's been obvious everything we've been learning up to now, but I'm saying it's Reish Lakish who is the one who said Avos Hein Hein Hamer Kama, the Avos of God's chariot. Yes, question.
I think it's actually very important that they even though they're God's chariot, it's even more important that they do show the mistakes so that we don't deify them.
Of course. And that we can possibly relate to them.
Right.
Because if you give an exposition of why we should learn this thing from Yaakov, we run the risk of someone saying, oh yeah, but that's Yaakov. I can't live up to that. That's, remember, one of the earliest sources we did from Eliyahu Rabbah was, everybody has to say, when will my actions start to resemble the actions of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov? Yes?
It's nice that Reish Lakish is saying this also, though, because he was also a thief,
Baal Tshuva, yeah. Gladiator, according to some scholars.
Yeah,
certainly a thief in Bava Metzia Daf Pei Dalet. Okay, so the last source on the page. This is pretty obvious. See the last line? Sarech Adam shelo l'shanos ben mibanav sh'al yidei k'sones pasim sh'oso Yaakov avinu liyosef v'yisnu hovso. A person should not treat one child differently than the others. The brothers hated him because Yaakov gave him a special shirt. But the special shirt was really only a function of other things. Some of this pasim I know is often translated as striped shirt. Pas can be a stripe. What's more likely is a pas, which is actually a wrist. Pas yad is the wrist. Some of this pasim means a shirt that went down to the wrist. It means a long sleeve shirt. As opposed to the brothers who only got short sleeve shirts because they had to work in the fields. You don't wear a long sleeve shirt in the field, right? So it was a function of the fact that Yosef got special treatment and didn't have to work. He studied. He was smart. Right? That's what made him so helpful to everybody. He knew everything. He had a finger in everyone's pot throughout the whole story. And that's the Sforno says beautifully. He tried to give his brothers pointers on how to be an expert shepherd. We learned from Parshas Vayetze that Yaakov knew something about shepherding that even to this day we don't know. Right? About, you know, remember with the Maklos and the getting them to interbreed in a certain way. Right? He had something about genetic stuff about shepherding that we still don't know. But be that as it may, if Yaakov shared that with Yosef, then Yosef tried to share it with his brothers, but his brothers didn't want to hear anything about it. You've been telling us you're kachal level, sitting at home all the time. So one can argue with this medrash maybe and say, is it possible that they hated him more because he brought bad reports about them, or because he dreamed of supremacy, right? More than just the special treatment. But the special treatment is what started it and what made him feel supreme over them. See it? Okay, turn to page 9. Our perception of biblical characters, especially now, Avosimos, is shaped first and foremost by Chazal, especially from Bereishis Rabbah. However, now that Midrashim are not used to such a great extent, l'da'avoneinu, no one here studies Midrashim straight from the Midrash, right? Our perceptions are shaped by the Midrashim Rashi chose to record. Right? If I asked you, how is it that when Yaakov went to sleep, it says he took Vayikach me'avnei hamakom, which sounds plural, and then when he wakes up in the morning, it says Vayikach ha'sa'evin. How did all those rocks become one? You know?
They all
transformed into one overnight, because that's what Rashi writes. But there, in Chazal, there are a number of different explanations to that phenomenon. You know the one that Rashi quoted. People in this room certainly know more Rashi than Midrashim. So our perceptions of the Avos are created more by Rashi. Why am I telling you this? Rashi did not approach the Avos the way the Midrashim did, which was, I think, more realistic. The Midrashim were willing on many occasions to accept that this was wrong and to explain it, to maybe excuse it even, but or to show where he was punished for it. Right? Rashi was coming from a different direction. So what we see, what I'm doing, what do you think is happening on page 9? All of the Midrashim we showed on the previous pages that were critical of biblical characters, right? Let's see what Rashi says about those stories. For instance, the Midrash that said that we had to go to Egypt because Yaakov left Israel, look what Rashi writes, 24. V'yirav baretz, ba'osa ha'aretz levado, l'nasoso. There was only a famine in Canaan, not in Egypt, obviously. He went to Egypt to get food. Right? He says, why is it possible that a famine in Canaan is much more devastating than in Egypt?
There's no river.
Is Canaan doesn't have a river like Egypt does. Right? So,
what about Tiberias?
If you have rain, it's going to dry up. And then the Yarden becomes thinner and thinner, and there's no water, no necessary water. So it says, "Lunasoso im yaharhera chard varav shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu, she'amar lo leleches el eretz Kanaan, ve'achshav masiu latzeis bimena." God is testing Abraham. He told him to go to Canaan, and look at this, the famine is tempting him to leave. According to Rashi, did he pass this test? Yes, because he didn't complain. The test was, will he complain? Im yahar her. According to Ramban, the test was, will he leave? And according to Ramban, he did not pass the test. Right? Okay. So you see, what am I telling you in source number 24? The Midrash allows for this behavior to be considered sinful, and even explains other punishments that happen because of it, and Rashi clears it up. Let's do the next one. It says, "V'ma'eda ki irashena." Remember that? How do I know that I'll inherit? Gemara Nedarim says that because Abraham had the chutzpah to ask this question, we were punished with the exile in Egypt, for goodness sakes. Right? We talked about this, actually. And he says, "Lo sha'alo os alzos, aval yirusha sa'aretz sha'alo os, v'amalo b'ma'eda." Amalafav hodieni be'ezes chus yiskaimu b'nai. Amalav kodesh baruchu b'schus hakabanos. Abram was not saying, how do I know I'll inherit this? How do I know I'll deserve to inherit this? That's not a breach of faith. The Pasha Pshad is a breach of faith. How do I know? What do you mean, how do you know? Because I told you, I'm God. Right? So, you see what's happening? Nedarim, the Lamed Daled says that this was sinful and it gives you a punishment. If you're going to show sin, you have to show punishment. Right? There's a Roshan. as to be a result of the sin. Right? And here Rashi says it wasn't sinful. Next. The Medrash said that Yitzchak was punished for favoring Esav. It says in the Torah, "Esav sonesi." In the Torah, it says, "Vayehav Yitzchak is Esav."
Very punishable, though.
What?
Like, why is that? Why would someone be like? I know Esav's like a Russian.
Punished for loving your son, yeah.
Loving your son, it's
give a simple answer. When it says Esav sonesi, he's talking about Edom. 1,000 years later, this is Esav the person, right? And still, the Medrash finds fault with Yitzchak for favoring Esav. In this Medrash, in this Rashi, he clears it up. It wasn't Yitzchak's fault. Esav put on a veneer. He put on a show. He hunted him with his mouth. You see it? You can't blame a man for favoring someone who tricked him into favoring him. Yvalin? Remember I mentioned this, the Baal HaTorah, who does find fault with Yitzchak, even though he was sort of bribed. That's the point. It's not a good reason to favor a son, because he puts food in your mouth. He bribed you, and he blinded you. He made you blind to the truth. Amazing. And the Daskanim. Quite amazing. But again, Rashi fixes it up. Patches it over. This one's amazing. Look at source number 27 and you'll see that what Rashi is doing. And understand that in Rashi's time, there were great polemics with Christians who were accusing the Jews of acting immorally. Right? And that they did so because they were trying to imitate Yaakov. Christians somehow don't like Yaakov. They relate more to Esav, they relate more to Haman than to Mordechai. Which is strange because we call Christianity Edom, right? Christians, what do you think they call themselves? They're Israel. They're the new Israel. They're Israel. That's us. We replaced the old. Right? They don't think they're Esav. And yet, because they hate Yaakov, strangely, they explained him as negatively as possible. So when Rashi, who was very much exposed to that, commented on Yaakov's behavior, tried to explain him as righteous as possible. How can you explain righteously? Anochi Esav b'chorecha asisi kasher dibarti. Am Esav b'chor. I wonder why Yaakov didn't at that moment say, Anochi Yaakov b'chorecha. My brother Esav sold me this right, and I'm here to get his bracha. Why does he refer to himself as Esav b'chorecha? You know what I'm saying? Making his father think he's Esav. Esav is not your b'chor. I am. Purchased it. So I think that Yaakov didn't purchase that he should be called the Bechor. He purchased that after father dies, because otherwise he would have told his father right away. He would have told him that day. Dad, guess what? I'm the Bechor from now on. Now, it's possible he didn't tell him because he thought that Yaakov would undo it. Say, you can't buy that. Right?
It's true, though. How can you buy the Bechor?
Of course you can. You're 2 years older than me. I can say, here's $1 million. When it comes time for us to inherit, just the two of us, and you're supposed to get a double portion, I'm getting it. It's a gamble. Because if I think I'm not going to outlive father, it's a great deal for me. How do you know Esav didn't expect to outlive his father? What did he say when he sold it? He said, Hinei hulech lamus, not that I'm going to die now of starvation. That's crazy. Yaakov wasn't taking advantage of him. Like, I'm not going to die now. I expect to die soon here in the fields when I'm hunting and I'm, right? What good is a portion? Because I don't expect to outlive father. What's my inheritance? Big deal. Ibn Ezra says that Yitzchak had squandered all of Avram's wealth, so it didn't matter. Right? But then Yitzchak became very, you know, made a hundredfold on his investments. So he regretted what he did. But you can certainly sell that.
You can get the benefits from
it.
You can't get the title.
Okay,
you can get the benefits. You can't just say like...
You're right, but it means Anochi Esav Hamagia Li Chelek Bechor. That's a question we'll have to deal with another time. But for now, this Rashi says that Yaakov is totally absolved. He says, Anochi, I am who I am. Esav Bechorecha. Esav is your Bechor. I've done many things in my life like you've been, not this, because you didn't ask me to do this. You asked Esav to do this. Right? Look at the note I wrote on the side. Yaakov is not to be faulted for lying to his father. Goodness gracious, in the Medrash, he was very much at fault. Haman accused Mordechai because of this. Right? So, and here Rashi says, no, he's absolved. Next. It says, Katomti mikol ha-chasodim mikol ha-emes. Right? And this is interesting because here, Rashbam and Ramban find Yaakov very much at fault for his humility in Parshas Vayishlach. What's the humility? Fearing that Esav would try to kill him. What do you mean humility? Because katonti mikol chasodim, I don't deserve your chesed. What do you mean you don't deserve it? I just told you I'm going to be with you. Go back home, I'm with you. At the end of Parshas Vayetze, Hashem tells Yaakov, I will be with you, I will get you home, and then Yaakov hears that his brother's coming with 400 men. Imagine how difficult it was to be one of the Avos. Hashem just told me, promised me I'll safely get home, and here's my brother with 400 men. Now, wouldn't you say a man of profound faith would say, I see a contradiction here. God just told me he'll protect me, and it looks to me like I'm about to be killed.
It's not nothing bad. Like, you have to be cautious.
You should have said something like, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for God is with me.
But we don't look at Jesus like that. Like,
Avram ran through his moment too, and he said, goodness gracious, yesterday God told me it's Chok Yikarela Chazora, and now he told me to give him a mountain, take a knife to his throat. What? Whoa. Hello? Believer in God, you're going to run into this kind of thing all the time. God is very mysterious. He chooses to walk in the darkness when we can't see him. And you have to just sometimes make your move. And Yaakov's move was, I have to have protection. I have to react. I can't just say, okay, let the chips fall where they may because God said they'll be with me. Maybe that's the right thing.
You can't just walk across, stay outside and walk across the street with your eyes closed.
So here Rashi is saying, that is true. Rashi's explaining that Yaakov was not lacking in faith. He was just abundant in humility. This is an interesting film to go on that says that in the Sechet Sot that says that you should have an eighth of arrogance. You're allowed to have just a small, tiny bit. So on the face of it, it sounds like an eighth of an eighth is the first squared number that's less than 60. If you're a bottle of shishin, if you have so little arrogance, it'll be bottled with your other characteristics. All right, cute. And it should have said a sixth of a tenth. All right, an eighth of an eighth. The Vilna Gaon says, if you look at the 8th parsha, Reishis Noch Lech Lech Abayur Chesar, told us to read Zer Yishlach, the 8th pasuk is Katomti Mikol HaChasid. And that's what the Medrash is saying. Be as humble as Yaakov. But he wasn't lacking in faith. He was just abundant in humility. Do you see a trend that's happening here that goes all the way down page 10? That's your assignment. I want you to look at every source of Rashi on page 10. They will all be explained by the writing on the side. Okay?